Lecture 12, Alexander the Great and the Diadochoi.
In this lecture, I wish to look at the changes wrought in Asia Minor by the conquests of the Macedonian king Alexander the Great and the succeeding states carved out by his generals, who are often collectively known as the Diadochoi, the successors. In the previous lecture, I concluded with the fact that Alexander the Great really surprised everyone's expectations of what was going to happen in the 4th century BC. He came to the throne at a young age, about 21, 22 years of age, in 336 BC, and in a series of campaigns of some 8 years in length, he overthrew the Persian Empire, marched to the ends of the earth, at least as Aristotle had told him, that is to India, the Indus Valley, and changed forever the course of history, not only in the ancient world, but for the whole Western tradition. And I always think of Alexander as the premier case that if anyone ever has a doubt that an individual can direct the destinies of humanity, his career does prove that. On the other hand, how did Alexander end up doing this? It wasn't as if Alexander suddenly built the Macedonian army and carried out all the reforms and institutions necessary to achieve this. And what I'd like to talk about first is a bit on Macedon. And Macedon is actually very relevant to us because Macedon, or as the Romans later called it, Macedonia, as a province, in many ways resembles a good deal of Western Asia Minor, certainly in terms of climate, and its relationship to the Greek world is very similar to what the western shores of Asia Minor are like, that is Lydia, Caria, Lycia, vis-a-vis the Greek city-states. The Macedonians were descended apparently from a people closely related to the Greeks. They linguistically had a common parent, as did perhaps the Phrygians, the people who moved into Asia Minor at the beginning of the Iron Age. But by the Classical Age, Macedonian would have been extremely difficult for a Greek to understand. And by all accounts, the Greeks saw the Macedonians as foreigners, as barbarians. Very sensitive issue these days, but one that seems to be borne out by the evidence. The court, however, the royal family in Macedon was regarded as Greek, at least since the time of the Persian Wars. And increasingly, the Macedonians came under very, very strong Greek influence. And in time, certainly by the time of St. Paul, when he was preaching in cities in Macedon, he was preaching in Greek cities. So the Macedonians received Hellenic culture, were brought into the wider Hellenic world, certainly starting in the 5th century BC, and very much accelerated as a result of the reforms of Philip II, who was the dad of Alexander the Great. And let's just for a moment talk a bit about Philip II. Philip made Macedon a reality. He inherited an extremely weak Balkan kingdom, which was on the edge of the Hellenic world and was at best Greek by courtesy. Philip claimed Greek descent, and Philip married as his principal queen a woman named Olympias, who was Greek. Was from northwest Greece from the region of Epirus and claimed descent from Achilles and Heracles, that is the Roman Hercules. And Alexander, the son of this marriage, the only son of this marriage, regarded himself always as a Hellene, thought of himself as a member of the Greek world, and was very, very conscious of his descent from Greek heroes, knew the Iliad by heart, and in his life, I think, was playing out in his own mind some sense of what the Iliad was. He was always comparing himself to Achilles, to Heracles, later to the god Dionysus in all of his campaigns. And his mother, Olympias, fed him on these sort of notions that he was of Homeric descent. Philip himself was amazing, quite different from his son Alexander. He was a rip-roaring king. You have to understand the Macedonian court was something out of the pages of Homer and a bizarre preview of, say, the Vikings and Hell's Angels. It was an extremely tough court. The Macedonian king had to pal around with very difficult nobles. But Philip created a Macedonian nation or kingdom, national monarchy, by conducting a social and economic reforms that rebuilt the army as a royal institution. To do this, he had to pull off a social revolution and still retain royal control of it. And it's really quite an achievement that Philip did this. His army was based on a phalanx of infantry, of peasant conscripts, armed with a spear that was twice the length or more than the normal spear used by Greek hoplites. His heavy infantry was trained to fight as a phalanx, 16 deep. The nobles were recruited as heavy cavalry who operated on the wings, and he developed the classic iron anvil and hammer techniques where the phalanx pinned the opponent and the cavalry flanked and took the enemy in the rear. This is what is often called combined arms. Philip pioneered these types of tactics. And his son inherited a superb army.